While some Eurovision fans take the 60 seconds in between songs to get a refill on their drinks or to grab an extra snack, others like myself are fascinated to watch the postcards in between each entry. In this episode of ESC 101, join me as we explore the story of the people responsible for the postcards of the 1979 Eurovision Song Contest and how each country was brought to life in those 60 seconds. This is ESC 101. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to ESC 101, your home of Eurovision history and obscurity. This is the podcast where we take a look at the Eurovision Song Contest throughout the years to uncover the story behind the world's largest international televised music competition. Welcome to episode 9. My name is Alexander. Let's jump into the story behind the postcards of the 1979 Eurovision Song Contest. For those of you who may not be familiar, it's usually tradition for there to be some kind of small segment in between each entrant in the Eurovision Song Contest, usually about 60 seconds, to allow the artists and their props to get off the stage and allow the next act to get onto the stage. This transition period would normally be a lull in between songs, so producers use the term postcard as a way to fill the space. Not every contest has had postcards. In fact, the first contest to actually have a segment in between songs that wasn't simply filming the audience or the host introducing the songs was 1970. But this week, we'll be exploring the story behind the postcards of 1979, and I'll describe and react to each postcard. But first, let's learn a little bit more about the people behind the postcards themselves. The postcards of the 1979 Eurovision Song Contest consisted of a scene which represented the upcoming entrant's country, with an action being performed out by silent characters. The scenes themselves consisted of either landmarks, typical landscapes, or artistic representations of a noteworthy or famous association of the respective country. Some of these illustrations look a little bit stereotypical, but these are designed to visually present a country in the most recognizable way. And sometimes what may seem stereotypical allows people to identify and recognize the regions of Europe without needing to know European geography. The illustrations were designed by Dudu Geva and Yohanan Lakitsevits. Dudu Geva, born 1950 and died 2005, was an Israeli cartoonist, illustrator, and comic book creator. He worked at Israel TV's Channel 1 as a graphic designer and published a number of artistic works, including cartoons, comic strips, and satire columns in many leading newspapers. At one point in his life, he was also sued by Disney over the creation of a cartoon strip called Moby Duck, where the duck had a visual style similar to Donald Duck. He was charged with violating Disney's copyright. Yohanan Lakitsevits was born in 1943 in Yugoslavia. He was an Israeli animator and illustrator, working on a variety of programs for Israeli television starting in the 1960s. In addition to his work on Israeli television, he published cartoons in newspapers, he worked on children's books, and participated in many other artistic projects for a variety of people. As of the recording of this episode, he is still alive to this day. These two individuals were the main creators of each postcard set, creating a cartoonish depiction of a representative scene of each country. Each postcard had actors which acted out a scene. These performers were pantomimes, which, if you remember from episode 6, is the same type of performer as Achille Zavatta, the Interval Act of 1962. This particular group of pantomimes came from the Yoram Boker Mime Group, an organization which held some of Israel's leading mime artists. Artists like Ezra Dagan and Hanak Rosen were involved in the postcard scenes. Yoram Boker himself was born on May 24, 1940 in Paris, France. Being born in the middle of the Second World War, Yoram's parents managed to hide him in exchange for money. Both of Yoram's parents were sent to concentration camps, but they managed to survive. In 1959, Yoram left France to live in Israel, fulfilling his military service. He met Marcel Marceau in Israel and was invited to study with him in Paris in 1962, studying the art of the pantomime with a few other students. After completing his studies, he returned to Israel in 1965 and founded the Yoram Boker Pantomime Theater in 1970. His theater included a number of actors performing shows hundreds of times around Israel. His shows would appeal to children and youth, creating a recognizable style across the country. The IBA, Israel's Broadcasting Authority, approached Yoram to be part of the Eurovision Song Contest, specifically to direct the postcard segments in between each song. Some notable pantomimes to act in the postcards include Yoram Boker himself, Ezra Dagan, Enoch Rosen, Irit Lavi, and Uri Tannenbaum. Yoram continued to put on various artistic performances and productions after Eurovision, and even won a few awards over his lifetime. Yoram ultimately became a professor at Tel Aviv University, where he taught at the Yolanda David Katz Faculty of the Arts in the Department of Theater Arts. Yoram Boker unfortunately died on June 16, 2023, at the age of 83, in Herzliya, Israel. Now that we know the story behind who created the postcards and the actors that depicted the scenes in those postcards, let's take a look at the postcards themselves. If you're interested in seeing the postcards for yourself, I put together a video that shows just the postcards themselves, so I'll leave a link to that video on the show notes page for this episode on the ESC 101 website, esc101podcast.wordpress.com. I'm going to go through each postcard individually and describe and react to the postcards in the order that they were presented in. So the first postcard is for Portugal. The scene is a beach. There's a small cliff in the background with a little village depicted on the top. There's a sailboat that's going by in the distant ocean, a few boats on the beach, and a few baskets that just are kind of sitting there. There's a group of sailors that are on the beach that are pulling an invisible rope, which is pulling a bottle of port onto the shoreline. Port is an alcoholic beverage that is well known in Portugal and is quite well famous for being a delicious beverage. The pantomimes are dressed in various sailor ensembles, all kind of in long pants. Most of them are wearing boots of some kind, although a couple are barefoot, and most of them are wearing hats of some kinds to protect themselves from the sun. There's a light guitar music that is playing in the background to represent sort of Portuguese music, and it's quite a whimsical little postcard. It's quite fun to see the Portuguese seafaring nature on display. The second postcard is for Italy. In this scene, there's a couple of tourists posing for a picture in front of the Leaning Tower of Pisa. the photographer is asking the couple to move slightly to the side so they can get them in frame. But in a weird turn of events, the Leaning Tower of Pisa straightens up and the tourists go on a slant. The cameraman looks like he's losing his mind and tries to clean the lens to make sure he's not hallucinating. But at the end of the day, the picture keeps shifting around and he just kind of gives up. This scene was accompanied by a stereotypical Italian sounding little ditty number, which is done by a little bit of a piano and a little bit of synthesizer. Not exactly high quality music, but definitely something that is kind of stereotypically Italian. The third postcard is for Denmark. This depicts the Little Mermaid on a moonlit sea, lounging on a rock with ducks swimming by. The Little Mermaid is entirely in gray, which suggests that it's mimicking the statue of the Little Mermaid. The sea is moonlit with a crescent moon that has a little bit of a face on it. I can't exactly tell, there's a little bit of a creature standing on another rock that's next to the Little Mermaid, and I can't tell if that's a frog or some kind of other creature. Kind of looks like it has a crown on its head. There's a family of ducks that swim by, and the Little Mermaid tries to wave to the ducks, but the ducks kind of ignore her. But there is another duck that comes by on its own and does actually take the time to say hello to the Little Mermaid as the Little Mermaid goes back to her little pose. There's some kind of like light carousel music almost, which is very light and very airy. Sometimes it reminds me of it almost being like a nighttime lullaby, and it's very soothing and peaceful. Definitely a postcard that is reminiscent of nursery rhymes or childhood stories. The fourth postcard is for Ireland. This scene depicts an Irish village street with a pub clearly labeled with the word Guinness on top and another house next to it. In the distance, there's a castle and it's a gray sky. There is a street sign that points people to various destinations within Ireland. On the scene, there are a couple of actors. At least I believe it's a couple of actors. It's difficult to tell because they're hugged. They're hugging themselves and they're tightly intertwined, and they're dancing to what is clearly a very Irish jig. It almost looks like intertwined leprechauns, which again sounds very stereotypical, but I kind of like the Irish jig that they're doing, and the dance seems entertaining enough. And as they're dancing in the street, some windows become illuminated as if they are waking the town up to enjoy a party, or perhaps they're causing a ruckus. But in either case, it is definitely Irish, and there is no mistaking which country this represents. The fifth postcard is for Finland. This postcard is rather simplistic compared to some of the other ones. This one depicts some of the actors skating outside of a Finnish castle or Finnish village of some kind, surrounded by trees and snow. And that's quite literally it. They're simply skating back and forth on an ice rink of some kind, showing that Finland has an affinity for ice and snow and, I guess, ice skating. Not much else to say about this postcard other than it's quite enjoyable, but it seems a bit generic even for Finland. You figured there would have been some kind of sauna or perhaps some hard Finnish rock, but maybe we're not in the right era for that just yet. The sixth postcard is for Monaco. This is one of the few, if not I believe it's the only postcard that doesn't actually have music attuned to it. So I guess the Israeli broadcaster couldn't think of a song that would have been attributed to Monaco. The scene depicts a Grand Prix de Monaco, or the Grand Race of Monaco. The country is famous for being a racetrack during the Formula One Grand Prix races. There's an actor who's holding a racing flag waiting for the cars to go by, and he seems bored for a majority of the postcard until the cars come rushing in. Of course, the cars aren't actually being shown. They're so fast you can't see them on screen. And there's an audience in the background depicting a number of different individuals. They're all kind of stereotypically drawn to be, I don't even know exactly how to describe it. Some of them have very large protruding noses, and some of them are dressed in suit and ties, others in uniform. Some are in fancy dress and others look like they're in sailor's outfits. So I can't really tell exactly what it's supposed to be, but I guess it's a wide variety of people watching the Grand Prix of Monaco. Eventually, the cars are speeding by so quickly that the race flag holder kind of gets a little hurt. I don't know if you describe it that way. The flag pole gets broken, the one where he's holding a checkered flag. The race attendant is holding, and he ends up getting some smut on his face and looking a little bit disoriented. The seventh postcard is for Greece. This postcard consists of a Greek statue stretching and doing various poses in an athletic stance. This appears to be done in some kind of ancient ruin, as you can see some of the columns have been ruined and aren't exactly looking brand new. For some odd reason, the hosts of the Eurovision Song Contest in 1979 peer from behind some of the columns to look in surprise at the statue moving. It doesn't really exactly make sense to me. It plays a sort of Greek tune for most of the postcard, but then it kind of just breaks away and just feels a bit awkward sometimes. I'm not exactly sure of the story behind the postcard, but it definitely looks Greek no matter what. The eighth postcard is for Switzerland. Thank you. This depicts a Swiss village in a valley surrounded by mountains. Three pantomimes are rotating themselves as if they're in a music box or a wind-up clock. They're dressed in very German or Bavarian clothing, as if to indicate they are in the German-speaking part of Switzerland. Very stereotypical scenes in which they are placing themselves in this odd rotational stance as if they're being rotated in a wind-up clock. They use their feet to slowly shuffle themselves around, holding themselves in various poses and simply just rotating in place. That's what it is for Switzerland. There is music box music that is playing as they rotate, which is quite interesting. And some of the poses and the faces they make don't make a lot of sense to me, but I guess they have to have these overemphasized facial expressions so that television viewers can actually see what's going on their tiny screens. We have a great advantage in the 21st century having television screens as large as we do, and being able to see the distinct details is quite a pleasure to see indeed. The ninth postcard is for West Germany. My best guess is that this is supposed to depict a life in rural Germany. I don't really understand exactly what's going on. There's a cartooned house. Two individuals are standing on top with something being there, and they're using the chimney to try and fish something off of. Maybe it's a wooden stovetop if they're looking for a snack or something. There's also another individual who it looks like they're making preserves. They're grabbing like something out of a barrel and putting it into a container. There's animals kind of all over the house, including some chickens, looks like a cat. But then there's some really odd stuff that's also around. I can't tell if it looks like it's crickets or there's frogs or there's another person in the distance. And then there is something that's sitting on the tree, and something is the best way I can describe it because it looks as if it's like, I don't know if it's the globe or some round-faced person. They don't have regular colored skin. It's almost like a green skin blending into the blue sky. They're smoking a pipe and sitting on a tree with what almost looks like clogs. Again, I really can't describe the scene any better than what I am now. West Germany, maybe because the whole thing with World War II, they didn't want to do anything that was stereotypically German, and they wanted to do something that was a bit more comedic rather than identifying. I really don't know the motivations behind this postcard, and I really can't say much more about it other than if you watch it for yourself, you'll probably see what I mean when I'm confused and befuddled, I guess would be the best term to describe this, but we'll move on to the next postcard. The 10th postcard is for Israel. It depicts two people that are dressed in biblical style clothing carrying a bushel of grapes hanging on a very large wooden stick that's being held between the two of them. They're walking towards the forest and end up in a fruit garden where their mood perks up and they start walking with a bit more of a jaunt. They randomly end up on a beach where they take off their robes and begin lounging in the sun while their bushel of grapes hangs magically in the air while they get to lounge in the sun. The 11th postcard is for France. And this depicts an artist as if they're painting the scene itself. There's stereotypical French music while a tourist couple watches the painter go on. They thank him for his painting skills and they eventually go into a little bit of a dance. There seems to be some kind of, I don't know if it's described as a homeless person or a grifter or just some kind of street person who kind of stumbles around and seems a bit incoherent. I don't know if this is supposed to represent the wine industry or what have you, but there's a lot of stereotypical French things like amour, art, and wine depicted in this scene. The 12th postcard is for Belgium. This is another one that I might be missing some cultural context, so I don't exactly know what's going on here. There's some kind of feast going on that looks a little bit medieval. Everyone's dressed in these sort of old-timey clothes, and there's a couple of gentlemen that are carrying a pallet of what looks like bowls or bread of some kind, and they're having an argument as to which direction they should be moving on, all the while a third person who is at the feast seems to be wanting to grab one of the pallets without being noticed. Again, I don't know the cultural history of Belgium that well to know what this is supposed to be depicting, so either the people who came up with this just decided to have a random thing go on, or perhaps there is some sort of metaphorical meaning that I just don't get. The 13th postcard is for Luxembourg. This depicts two castle guards standing on top of a turret, overlooking the scene to ensure that the kingdom is safe. However, halfway through the postcard, the royal banner of Luxembourg changes to a modern banner of Luxembourg, And they begin listening to a kind of rock and roll song on their little radios that they're holding. It doesn't look like radios at first because it looks like they're holding onto swords, but it's then revealed to look like a couple of radios that they're holding onto. Once the song ends, of course, they go back to their royal duties and go on to defend the kingdom of Luxembourg, or I should say the Grand Duchy of Luxembourg. The 14th postcard is for the Netherlands. This scene depicts a field of tulips with Dutch windmills in the background. The characters are wearing some of the most stereotypical Dutch outfits with wooden clogs and some pointed hat. Of course, this is quintessentially Dutch in the most oddest way. They're riding fake bicycles as they go through the tulip fields surrounded by windmills. I don't think you can get any more stereotypical for the Netherlands, but here it is. Definitely unmistakable and recognizable in every sense of the word. The 15th postcard is for Sweden. Now, this one must come out of a children's story or folklore tale that I'm not familiar with. The scene is in a very dark and dense forest where every tree has a face of some kind. There's two trolls. I guess trolls is the best way I can describe it. Very long-haired, short creatures that are walking about the forest and simply kind of being there. There's a third one that emerges. And again, I'm missing a lot of context for understanding this for Sweden, but here it is. The Swedish postcard is simply bewildering and I guess memorable in its own right, but I wouldn't have recognized it for Sweden if I were to see it on its own. The 16th postcard is for Norway. This scene depicts a Viking boat sailing on a river that's intertwined by mountains. The song that's being played is a little piece of the Hall of the Mountain King, and the boat is being sailed by a few stereotypical-looking Vikings with the pointed horn hats and the very long blonde beards. Apparently, the Viking helmets were not supposed to have horns, as it would kind of be impractical for journeying and such, but I'm not an expert on Viking history and things. So again, I think it's playing into some stereotyping. The ship itself is beautifully designed. There are some very intricate details on the work of the wood. And I had to commend whoever created the boat, because there is some very intricate detail that I'm sure didn't get through onto the screens of 1979 television, but certainly does in 2023. The 17th postcard is for the United Kingdom. There are a couple of landmarks in the background, including the Elizabeth Tower, or as people know it, Big Ben, St. Paul's Cathedral, and a few other buildings. The Buckingham Palace Gate kind of blocks them all off, and there is a wooden guard that stands guard at the gate. That depicts the changing of the guard, as in one of the actors brings in a wooden guard to literally change the guard. Then there is a civilian that is reading the newspaper that is standing next to the guard, but the camera moves in such a way that allows the wooden guard to be changed for an actual guard. The guard looks over to the civilian to read the newspaper, and the civilian looks back to see what the guard is doing, but the guard continues to appear as if they're standing upright and still, and the civilian pays no mind. Of course, the tune Rule Britannia runs in the background to make sure that people realize and understand that this is for the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland. The 18th postcard is for Austria. This is supposed to depict a ballroom, but there's no actual room involved. Instead, it kind of looks like a bit of a dreamscape. There's a pinkish purple tone to the room, but there's no distinction between the floor and the wall. It all kind of blends in between the two. There's some candelabras on the wall and a portrait of an old man in the background. And there's also several guests that appear between the actors and the foreground. All of these are either women dressed in very fancy ball gowns, or the gentlemen are either in bow ties and suits or military honors. There is a gentleman on the left of the postcard that is playing an invisible violin, and a couple that are dancing on the right. You only see the back of the woman for most of the postcard as they sway back and forth between the waltz music that is playing in the background. But eventually it's revealed that the gentleman that is dancing with the woman is not actually in a fancy suit and tie, but rather is in a very German slash Bavarian looking outfit to break the mold that it's not just fancy dressed gentlemen that can have a good time dancing to the waltz. The 19th and final postcard is for Spain. This depicts a classic bullfighting scene. A number of individuals in the crowd are wearing a number of different outfits. Some have the ruffle feathered neck bindings that you can find in the 18th and 17th centuries. Others are depicted in, I guess, classic Spanish garb of the period. And there's even a gentleman in the back that looks like he's wearing some sort of Arabic looking outfit, which might be a nod to Spain's relations with the Arab world, which obviously aren't so great, considering they tried to colonize them for a period of time. There are some actors in the crowd that are real, that do have a animated presence and cheer on the bullfighter, conquistador. I don't know anything about bullfighting. I don't know if any of these terms are correct, so I apologize to any Spanish people that are like, this is incorrect, you are insulting the pastime of my people. Or perhaps if you're not in support of bullfighting and you view it as a form of animal abuse, then again, I don't know what to say. There is no actual animal on the postcard, which is good. The pantomimes are simply just acting out a scene as if they are letting a bull kind of charge. And of course, the pantomime is successful at taming the bull or battling the bull. Again, don't know anything about it, but it is quintessentially Spanish regardless. And those are the 19 postcards of the Eurovision Song Contest in 1979. It's difficult for me to really talk about these postcards without seeing the postcards for yourself, so I really do encourage you to check out the postcards for yourself. Again, I have the video linked on the ESC 101 website, so feel free to check it out. It's just under 15 minutes, so that gives you a scope as to how long the postcard segments actually take in between each entry. It's really fascinating to see some of the artistic interpretations of countries. There are some that have a lot of elements to play by. The Irish jig, for example, the Austrian waltz, or even the Grand Prix in Monaco. But there are others that seem a bit simplistic and even bewildering, like the ones for Finland and Sweden. At the end of the day, these postcards are just that, small segments that are designed to entertain the audience while the acts change on the stage. And ultimately, this is a song contest, not a artistic postcard contest. But there's still a certain appreciation that goes into seeing some of the postcards, and especially when we compare them to the modern versions that show off the artists or the scenes of either the host country or the country that's being represented. And now that we've explored the postcards of 1979, let's turn over to some news coming out of Eurovision 2024. It's time for the Eurovision Report. Azerbaijan's broadcaster has chosen to internally select their act for 2024. They received 214 submissions, with 88 of those submissions being composed by Azeri songwriters, and the remaining 126 submissions coming from international songwriters. With Azerbaijan's recent results in the contest, they will have much to consider if they wish to qualify in next year's grand final. This is reported by Alberta Borgreen of ESC Extra. Albania's broadcaster has announced that it has received 80 submissions for its national final, Festivali I Këngës. Composers, lyricists, and artists from Albania, Kosovo, Sweden, North Macedonia, Italy, Germany, and the United States of America submitted entries, with a special committee evaluating the entries and shortlisting them. The final list of competing entries will be released at a later date. This was reported by Sanjay Jandani of ESC Today. This has been the Eurovision Report. Now it's time for Song of the Week. This is the part of the show where I share a Eurovision entry that I love, or that I hate, or I find bemusing, or simply fascinating. Let's find out which entry is this week's Song of the Week. This week's Song of the Week is the 2009 entry for Albania, Carry Me in Your Dreams, sung by Keji Tola, composer Edmund Zuali, lyricist June Muftaraj Taylor, and ended up placing 7th with 48 points. It got 10 points from Turkey, 7 points from Greece, Montenegro, and North Macedonia, known then as the former Yugoslav Republic of Macedonia, 6 points from Switzerland, 5 points from Croatia, 2 points from Hungary and Slovenia, and 1 point from Estonia and Sweden. This song is about a woman longing for her lover, and I can't tell if that lover is a real person or if it's simply someone that she dreamed up. The staging, while odd and for those who dislike clowns downright frightful, represents a dreamscape. Much like the dreams that we have, they sometimes don't make sense and have elements which can be described as silly and peculiar. Sometimes in dreams we don't see the faces of the people we interact with, and this is the case for the stage performance. The individual of which the woman is singing about appears in a turquoise jumpsuit with their face being covered by a sparkling glitter mask. This faceless individual stays close to the singer, sharing intimate moments of carrying her in his dreams. The two of them are flanked by two dancers donning mime makeup, as if they are clowns, introducing the peculiar elements. They are several inches shorter than the singer, and they perform various synchronized acrobatic-style dancing, including a headspin which goes on for an impressive amount of time. The stage itself has a very patterned background with sparkling elements to invoke the confusing perspectives dreams can have. This entry takes the "in your dreams" part of the song as literally as it can, providing dream elements to show the audience, highlighting the peculiar nature that dreams have, paired with a longing to find the perfect lover which often only exists in our own dreams. I absolutely adore the song itself. It is a solid beat that as an instrumental track is simple perfection. The performance is a bit of a mixed bag. While the backing dancers provide entertaining elements, the singer's voice wavers from time to time and her fashion choice offends me. I recognize that dreams are not supposed to make sense, but that dress needs to be burned immediately. She could have worn literally anything else. A ball gown, a little black dress, literally anything except that hideous tutu outfit that she's wearing. Also, her quote-unquote dance move during the bridge is extremely basic. She barely moves around and she doesn't take advantage of being able to break out into some kind of memorable dance. Instead, she basically just stands there and makes the backing dancers do all the work, which sometimes can work depending on the song, but in this case, leaves something to be desired. But despite the mixed performance, I listened to the song on repeat. And for those reasons, Albania's entry for 2009 gets Song of the Week. It is amazing to see the amount of work that goes into such a small segment of the Eurovision Song Contest, one that sometimes gets missed on purpose so fans don't miss the acts themselves. But when we look at the people behind the art and see what ideas people have of the participating countries, some interesting perceptions are revealed. Remember to take some time to enjoy those little postcards and see what they do to represent each country before they go on. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can reach out on our Instagram page at ESC101podcast. Send us your thoughts, your comments, and any ideas that you'd like to have for future episodes. You can also reach us by email, ESC101podcast@gmail.com. Check out the show notes on our website, www.esc101podcast.wordpress.com. And be sure to leave us a review on whatever platform you are currently listening on. It helps us to allow more Eurovision fans like yourself to discover the history of the Eurovision Song Contest. And be sure to check out our previous episodes to see what other topics we've covered. And subscribe so you don't miss out on the next one. Next week, we're going to be exploring the story of one of the venues that hosted the Eurovision Song Contest. So stay tuned to discover which one we'll be visiting. You have been listening to ESC 101. See you next time.